and knew in an instant that she had made a terrible mistake. A blinding white light burst onto her eyes as the rune seemed to sear into her like a branding iron burning into her mind. A howl burst from her lips and from her soul. More than a sound, it was a magical emanation. Vali, sleeping as a wolf on the rock, heard it as the witch intended, and understood what it meant. It shook him from the fog of digestion. He stood upright on his back legs and looked to the southwest. Felix, watching Orphan and Sitada from the top of the troll wall, sensed it too at the precise moment he decided to follow the travelers around the mountain. The witch was pleased. Her magic couldn't call the wolf anymore. He was too powerful. But the magic the wolf had weaved himself out of his connection to this girl was enough. He would come, she thought, to do her bidding. On the island, Adisla and all she had meant to him came to the front of Vali's thoughts. She was in danger, he knew, and he needed to go to her. The sea channel between the island and the land was nothing to him. The wide plains and the mountain passes were nothing, nor fjords or swamps, valleys or cliffs. He took them all in devouring bounds, eating the distance between him and the girl, racing to the source of her cry at a pace no human, no horse, not even a bird could hope to match. The resonance of her agony was his guide, a stream he could follow to its source. The frozen night of the far north melted into a pale dawn. Farmsteads and sleigh trains flashed by. He flickered through forests, scattered herds of reindeer on wide plains, dropped from mountain peaks like a falling star, and flew on towards his target as a warp in the light. The caves slowed him. He forced his body down through the tunnels, only the power of his will strong enough to push him through. He didn't think where he was going. Adisla's scream called him on. In the shove and squeeze of his descent, Vali came to himself, although it no longer seemed unusual to him that he had the form of a massive wolf, nor that the caves glittered with a million scents. His memories came back to him, but they only increased his pain. The woman he loved was suffering terribly, and the only meaning of his life was to find her and take her agony away. Then he was standing before his father, Orthun, in a cave full of gold. The king was terrible in his war gear. Vali tried to tell him that Adisla was in danger. He knew that his father would not understand his concern for a farm girl, but he wanted to implore him to put that aside and help him. Then Orphan had struck at him, and it was as if Vali was an unwilling passenger in his own body, his protests useless, as the wolf drove forward to attack. Again the voices crowded in on him. Again the dreadful howl of the wolf echoed through his head, a sound that he knew was as much part of him as his love for Adisla. He was losing his way, surrendering to the fury of the animal he had become. Orthon was down, his shield shattered, his weapon gone, and the wolf was on top of him, Vali fading away like a drowsy rider on a hot day surrendering direction to his horse. "Help me!" It was her voice. Orthon was hitting him with something. He felt nothing. "Help me!" Vali was reaching out, trying to make the wolf's body answer her call. "Help me!" The wolf paused its attack and stood panting over the old warrior. Orthon didn't stay still. He rolled from under the wolf and made for the horde pile, pulled out a jeweled sword and spun to strike at the animal's back, plunging the weapon down with two hands. The sword dug into the wolf's spine and snapped. Vali felt nothing. He sent Orthon sprawling to the floor with a backhanded blow from his forelimb.
"Help me!"
Finally, Vali had control over his movements. He broke from the combat and made his way down the passage, following Adisla's call. Chapter 55. Fenrisulfr. Felek was sick with the pain now, and had to pause. After four breaths, he limped on again. There was the smell of fish oil. Someone had a lamp down there. Yes, he could see the glow. He pressed on towards the light, the tunnel narrowing to a crack. He breathed in and slid sideways through. The cave was no bigger than the inside of a longhouse, the ceiling falling to the floor at one end and forming a wedge of jagged rocks like an animal's jaws. Adisla was there, lying bound on the sharp stones, soaked in blood. Felix's heart leapt as he saw her. The witch, her face a mask of blood from a ruined eye, was standing staring vacantly into space, a broken spear shaft in her hand. She had a piece of rope around her neck, tied with an elaborate knot at the front. Felek recognized it as a hangman's noose, Odin's symbol. The wolfman was terrified of the magical child, appalled by what had happened to Adisla, but he forced himself to speak. "Lady," said Felek, speaking to the witch, but limping as fast as he could to Adisla, "we are on an errand of great importance. A friend is bewitched and has taken the shape of a wolf. He is here in the tunnels. We need you to use your arts to cure him. I have gold and can pay." Adisla was shaking, and Felek could see she had lost a lot of blood. She was tied down by leather cords secured to rusty pins in the rock. Felek used the moonsword to cut them. Then he held her to him and kissed her on the forehead. She was weak, scarcely able to move, but she was saying something. Felek bent his ear to her mouth.
"I have seen her mind," she said. "I have seen her mind. Run, Felek, run."
Felek shook his head. "I couldn't run if I wanted to, and I do not want to," he said.
"I will stay here with you. It'll be all right. She will do what we ask, won't you, lady?"
Still the witch said nothing. There was a thump from the top of the tunnel.
"She put me to those rocks, Felek. I have been cruelly treated."
"Then she will make amends, or she will die. She will cure him."
"No, you don't understand."
"She's all we have. We must make her do as we ask."
"No, Felek, no."
Adisla was shaking and sobbing. The wolf, Adisla sensed, was an expression of some huge and terrible magic. Gulveig imagined herself as manipulating this force, but Adisla, allowed into the web of the witch queen's mind, had seen with saner eyes. Something that was part of Gulveig, but at the same time external to her and much more powerful, was bending her to its own will. The thing, whatever it was, felt cold and hungry. It looked for death in the jaws of the wolf, and that death was linked to Adisla's own and to those of Felek and Vali, again and again in an endless cycle of rebirth and slaughter, all that carnage expressed by the pulsing of that rune.
"He will kill her again and again, forever and ever, and us too. I have been in her mind. I have seen this thing happen. You must kill her before he does. He will act out the prophecy, and we will be doomed."
"I will not allow him to kill her," said Felek.
"How can you stop him?"
"This sword cuts him," said Felek. "I will drive him off. No wolf wants to bleed." He tried to sound confident, but he put more faith in the witch's powers than he did in his own sword skills. There was another thump, closer now, and a terrible howl. The witch turned her head in its direction. The tunnel was too narrow, Felek was sure, for the wolf to get through. That would allow the witch to work safe from its jaws. Felek looked down at Adisla, "You will have your prince back," he said.
"No,"
she said.
"No, I have seen. I have seen. Kill her, Felix. Kill her before it is too late. We can fight a monster. You cannot fight a god. She is our salvation. She is our death. Eternally and again, you and me, Bragi and more. Torture and horror without end. Always she looks for death in the jaws of the wolf. Kill her. Kill her before he does."
"Adisla, my love," he said, "the wolf is here. He has come. He could keep us in here forever. I am no swordsman, and already a mighty warrior, a man brought up to arms from his earliest years, has proved no match for him. The witch must help him. Can you speak to him again? Can you calm him and allow her to work her magic on him?
He is death, always death. He was a breath from killing me in the north. Do not bring him here, Felix. Do not bring him."
"He is here," said Felix. Adisla gave way to terror and just shook in his arms. The noise was still closer, a deep and angry growling, but coupled with something else. Felix, who had eaten countless times with his wolf brothers, recognized it. It was the sound of tearing flesh, of joints coming apart, of bones being pulverized. And then there was a third sound, an occasional pitiful whine, like a wolf caught in a hunter's trap. The monster was wounded.
"She will save us, or she will die."
"If she dies by his teeth, then we are lost. It is what she wants. Strike at her, Felix, strike at her."
Adisla was pulling at his shoulders. She was raving, thought Felix, driven mad by what she had endured. The witch was still staring ahead, the spear shaft raised. Felix wondered if she meant to strike Adisla with it, but couldn't summon the will. Another thump, much closer, and with it that grizzling note of agony. Felix stumbled as best he could back to the tunnel. There was a wave of breath, hot and fetid, which hit him like a fist, driving him back into the cave. The snapping jaws of the beast were no more than 3 paces from him. It was forcing its way through, so desperate it was smashing its own body in the attempt. This was Felix's chance to kill the beast. It was momentarily stuck, its back legs scrabbling at the ground, its shoulders crunching and cracking in the narrow gap, its head twisting and straining forward. He raised the moonsword, but could not strike. His mind went back to the escape from the beach, to the water. Vali had saved his life. It was more than that, though. The prince had been his double, the person he could have been but for a twist of the Norn's thread, and now he felt bound to him. He fell back.
"Use your magic, witch," he said, gesturing to the tunnel. "Use your magic, or I will kill you both."
Still the witch said nothing, did nothing. He raised the moonsword above his head as if to hit her, but even then she didn't move, just stood holding that spear as if about to strike at an unseen enemy. Felix turned to Adisla.
"When the wolf gets into the chamber, I will occupy it. You circle around and get out into the tunnel. It will be stuck in here for a time. If you can speak to him, then do. After that, she will cure him, or she will die."
"Kill her! Kill her!"
There was no more time. The wolf had made it and smacked onto the floor like a fish onto a slab. It seemed boneless almost, only its back legs were moving, and one of them seemed dislocated at a terrible angle.
"Go!" said Felix. "Go!"
He pulled Adisla to her feet. She swayed and would have fallen, but Felix, from somewhere, found the strength to support her, taking her arm over his shoulder and plunging towards the tunnel. They made it only a few paces before collapsing. The wolf was writhing like a hooked eel on the floor of the cave, the witch still immobile with that spear in her hands.
"Death and agony, always and for eternity," said Adisla.
Felix shook his head. "This for eternity," he said, and hugged her to him. "The love you sent me when we parted at the pool, the love we share now. Go, Adisla, and go with that love." He looked at the wolf. Its body was reforming. There was a sound like someone cracking a joint of mutton, and the shoulders became recognizable again. It stretched out its forelegs, and they too snapped back into shape.
"You'll die."
"I am not afraid to die. I am more afraid to live if I cannot save you. Go, go. You once risked your life by setting me free. Now I do the same for you. Go." The wolf breathed in, and there was a tearing noise as its lungs pushed its ribs back into position. Adisla squeezed his hand and kissed it.
"Leave here," she said.
"I will come back to you. I vow it." He shoved her into the tunnel.
"Felix!"
Adisla's arms stretched after him, but he had gone back, and she had no strength to move. The wolf had got to its feet, complete and whole. In the small cave, Felix realized just how big the animal was, its green eyes the size of shield bosses, and its teeth a hand span each. It towered over Felix and the skinny body of the witch. It looked at Adisla in the mouth of the tunnel, at the torture rocks, and at the witch. Then it fixed the witch queen with a hard stare and drew back its teeth. She was unmoved, just staring ahead with that spear raised. Felix saw what he needed to do. He had hated Vali, resented him for tying him and for being loved by Adisla. But hadn't it all been for the best? Without Vali, he would have never known what it was like to be loved, to feel a kiss returned or see an affectionate look in a woman's eye. His destiny had been tied to that of the prince, and though it would have been simpler to cut him where he stood, fighting was not the way forward. He'd had enough of that. Felix put down the moonsword at the monster's feet. "Prince," he said, "come back to yourself." The wolf hacked and coughed, and words began to form. "I am here. I am here. I am known to you. I am..." It seemed to be having difficulty framing its thoughts. Felix spoke. "This lady, this child, she is your cure. Bow down before her and do as she bids. Her magic is famous in all known lands. Let her help you, Vali. For the love you have known, for Adisla, relent." The wolf lowered its head and bowed down before the witch queen. For the first time, Felix saw the terrible child move. Her head turned towards him, and her gaze met his. Felix felt those spider claws scuttle across his brain again as a rush of thoughts and sensations. He saw what a fool he had been. The wolf was all that was standing between him and what he wanted. With Vali gone, Adisla was his, her past cut away, her future free. He thought of his disgust at seeing the prince gnawing at those bodies on the ship, Vali's slaying of the brave Bragi, his murder of the hunters. Why should he be cured? He had forfeited that right with his murders. Felix took up the moonsword and struck. Adisla screamed as the bright arc of the sword flashed through the air to sink into the animal's flank. But the blow was inexpert and poor. The wolf rounded on Felix, driving its teeth into him, ripping away the flesh from his side and smashing him to the floor. The animal threw back its head, opened its jaws, and swallowed the meat down. Adisla was too weak to move. The witch smiled. The next stage was now plain. It was more than a spell, though. It was an expression of something eternal, powerful, and undeniable. Like a rune, she thought. Yes, a rune. She stroked the piece of leather with the thumb of one hand, while the other still held the spear shaft. The wolf snarled, muscles bubbling on its body as its brother's blood dripped from its lips. It was transforming, not so much physically this time, but magically, the witch could sense. That was the key, as the rune Loki had given her had shown. The two brothers becoming one. It was all in place, all ready for the final stage. The witch reversed the spear shaft, wedged the butt on the floor, and leapt forward, impaling herself so that the point came out of her back. To Adisla, reality seemed to fall apart. Chapter 56 The Dead. The witch was a little girl again, lost in her first memories. What were her first memories? The dark and the cold, the faces of the women smeared with their ghost paint, the weak light of torches and the damp smell of the caves. They say with spells in tunnels dark, as a witch with charms did you work, and in witch's guise among men did you go, unmanly your soul must seem. The voice. The witch queen knew the voice. It was him. Who? Him, the mocker. She giggled. Yes, the mocker who was not so clever as he reckoned, Loki, the liar, who thought he could stand apart from the affairs of the gods and laugh. Not so. She had hooked him in and made him play his part too. Did he think those fetters just held his body and that his mind was free to wander the worlds as a man? No. He was snared and trapped and pinned and tethered, shackled and bound in every movement of his thoughts. She had done for him, that red-haired fellow, that night-caller, that smirker and snickerer and enemy of death. Had the women of the Troll Wall known who she was? They had made her their queen when she was 6. She had all the runes, all of them, as no mortal ever had before. Had they known? The truth had been obscured from the witch, but as the spear sent its energy of pain throughout her body, she saw what it was. She had killed them, every one, the girls, the boys, and her sisters. She had slipped into their minds at night to whisper suicide. She had strangled, drowned, and burned them in their trances. And she hadn't done it to weaken herself, as an extreme measure to preserve the magical gains of the sisterhood, but because she was a fearful and jealous god who despised them for their power. She had hidden her intent from herself, afraid that her earthly form might rebel and try to avoid its fate. She touched the triple hanging knot at her neck. One thing hidden inside another, inside another. She had thought she had hidden the wolf from himself to hide him from the god. In fact, she had hidden him from herself. Now the deception unraveled, and she knew who the wolf had come for. It had come for her. The spear seemed perfect. And the position she lay in on the floor perfect, too, an illustration of the rune that had guided her. She had made a Wolfsangel of her own body. She was everywhere, controlling. She sensed every mind on earth and could influence and touch them. In the moment of her greatest pain was her greatest magic. She said her own name. Odin! Her voice was cracked from years of disuse, but the force of the god's will pushed the sound through the reluctant throat. The body of the witch was bleeding, blood spreading in a wide pool. The wolf put down his head to lap at it. Adisla could not take her eyes off what was happening in the cavern. The witch stood. She pulled the spear from her belly and looked at the wolf, who looked back at her.
"I have called you here to do this," she said.
The wolf drew back its lips, exposing its teeth.
"It was this way, and it will be this way forever," said the witch. "Though it will never be easy for you, Fenrisulfr."
To Adisla, it seemed that the caves no longer existed. She was at the center of a huge blackened plain, where the shadows of ravens seemed to sweep over her, where smoke tinged the air, and the cries of a dying battle could be heard. The witch, too, was different. She was dressed not in that blood-stained shift, but in man's armor. She was carrying a shield, and in her hand was a cruel spear.
"I am Odin," said the witch. "All-hater, all-seer, lord of the hanged, lord of the slain, lord of madness, wisest in magic, and battle-bold."
The wolf began to keen.
"Come, Fenrisulfr," she said. "You are the slaughter-beast, my enemy and my accomplice."
The wolf sprang as the witch forwarded her spear and stabbed. Then the wolf had her by the throat, shaking her body like a dog with a doll until her feet came off the floor. Adisla saw strange bright shapes scatter from the witch, some fizzing to the ground, some melting like snowflakes on warm land, and others hitting her. A sense of flow and current seemed to go through her, then a frozen feeling, as cold as the north wind, then something that stamped and steamed and breathed was in her mind. Finally, a smell like fresh grass came to her, and a sense of warmth like a spring day. These were runes, she knew, each with its separate power. They told her so. They spoke. The witch had dropped her spear and was beating uselessly against the wolf's muzzle. The animal did not relax its grip, but tightened its jaws ever harder about her. Adisla saw rain showers, sunshine, a great tree that seemed to stretch up to the heavens, horses, a hearth. All the witch's magic shook from her in the animal's jaws. Then the scene faded. The walls of the cavern returned. The wolf stood over the witch, guzzling her flesh. Adisla felt the power of the runes and was restored and strong, all mysteries peeling away. Now, she knew, the magic was complete. The witch was Odin. The god had achieved what it wanted. Death, its own and the queen's, which were the same thing. The knowledge-seeking god had deepened his knowledge of death by experiencing it. The runes it had shed as its earthly self died seemed to burn within Adisla, offering insight and unhappiness. The wolf fed, consuming the witch's flesh in snaps and gulps. Then it shivered and coughed, shook, and finally lay down. Adisla took up the moon sword. The wolf looked at her and spoke.
"Do not. I cannot command myself if you do."
Adisla raised the weapon above her head. It felt unbalanced and unwieldy. Felek had hit the creature with all his strength, and though he had cut it, he had not killed it. She would not stand a chance.
"I am ready for death," she said.
"Not death," said the creature.
Its voice was low and rough, the human words forced through the wolf throat and mouth.
Is it you, Vali?
Her death has freed my mind from the bloody swamp. It is me.
You are the worst of mortals, she said.
I am afflicted, but this was an ending. There are sorcerers. We can find them. There is a way back for me.
At what cost? How many have you killed, my love?
I do not want to kill any more.
A wolf kills, Vali.
No, Adisla, no.
I have seen the truth. Felic was your brother, and you killed him.
The great animal bowed its head.
The wolf killed him.
You are an enemy of the gods, I have seen. This is your purpose.
I will be myself again, Adisla.
Adisla shook her head, tears cutting bright lines through the dirt on her face.
But I will never be me. We have loved outside our station. We have offended the gods. I want to go from you, Vali. I want to die.
If you die, my love is so strong that it will call you back from the halls of the dead.
I will live again, Vali. When the god died, a sharp magic entered me, and I am certain that it means rebirth. But I will live again without you. You are hated by the dead god.
I am part of his plan, as I saw on the field of the slain. He needs me to fulfill his destiny. I am his enemy and his helper.
I want no part of that, Vali.
There was a noise from behind her, though she didn't turn to see its cause. The wolf bent his head towards Adisla.
I love you, he said.
Then forget me.
She lifted the moonsword and stepped forward to strike him. Vali felt himself shiver. He knew he could not help but respond to a threat, but he fought with all his will not to attack her. He understood who he was now. A god-killer, reborn in a thousand lifetimes to hunt down Odin in all his incarnations. What room was there for love in that? What place even for himself against the vast magical forces that laid claim to him? He wanted her, but he would kill her if she moved against him. As with so much in his life, he had no choice. The wolf would answer violence with violence returned 1,000 times. The sword was bright in her hand, and the sound of anger was in his throat. He tried to frame the words. It isn't finished. We will live again, and I will never rest until I have found you and felt you love me as you once did. But the words didn't come, just the blood-hungry snarl of the wolf. Adisla closed her eyes and struck, but the blow didn't land. Orthon was behind her and took the sword from her hand as it came down, stepping in front of her and pushing her back with the same movement. Vali crouched. He looked at Adisla, and knew that his dreams had been crushed by the jaws of the wolf. They had parted, and all reason to live had gone from him. He was trapped forever in an immortal body with no more company than his undying misery, linked more to the deathlust of a demented god than to the woman he loved so much. He saw the cruel sword in the hands of his father, felt the cut still bleeding in his side, no matter that all his other wounds had healed. The Norns, he thought, had paused their weaving for him, and it was up to him if he wanted them to start again. He wanted it all to melt away, to be as it had been. To him, Adisla was still the girl by the fjord, lying with him in the grass under the brilliant sun. But that was just a dream now, and he had travelled too far for it ever to be reality again. He turned his eyes to the warrior. Orthon returned his gaze. At last, Vali forced out a word.
Death?
Death, said Orthon. The moon sword flickered in the lamplight. The wolf's eyes and teeth flashed from the dark. When it was done, the sword lay on the floor, and the wolf was still. Adisla came forward to look at the corpses, her body shivering and her mind numb. The strange woman with the ruined face was bending over Felix, stroking his hair. Adisla went to her and looked at him. His blue eyes were open, looking up into nothing. There was a cruel wound in his side where the wolf had torn into his belly. He wasn't yet cold, but there was no breath in him, and she knew for certain he was dead. She took him in her arms and kissed him. In her mind she felt the shimmering presence of the rune that had seemed to burst with the sense of spring, to patter and babble like the sound of rain by a stream. Rebirth. She tried to send it to him, to make him whole again, but that art took years to learn, and its cost was madness. The woman with the ruined face was looking down at her, and Adisla understood what she said with her eyes. There is a way. The woman took up the lamp and left the cave. Adisla lifted Feleg in her arms. The runes seemed to shine inside her as she did so, and he did not feel heavy, nor was the entrance to the cave difficult to pass through. She followed the light up through the silent tunnels to where she could feel fresh air on her face. At the end of a broad cave, where a bright shard of light split the dark, the woman stopped and put her hand on Adisla's arm. Then she kissed Feleg on the forehead and touched Adisla's cheek. Adisla walked on. She smelled wind, rain, and the cold coming off the sea. The shard of light grew. She walked on. At the mouth of the cave, she looked out from a ledge near the top of the sheer troll wall, the ground far beneath her feet. A vast distance of land and sea lay before her, glorious in green and blue. She kissed Feleg and held him to her. "For hope," she said, and stepped into the light. Sitada had followed to the ledge. From somewhere a wolf was howling. She understood what its voice was saying. "I am here. Where are you?" She stood listening for a while. Then she turned back to the caves. Chapter 57 Traveller's Tales. The hunters were 3 days into the forest looking for the wolves. There was a new pack in the area, they were sure. Sheep had been killed, and even an old horse. They had taken their bows and their bait and headed into the trees, looking for signs of the animals. They had found nothing, and were beginning to think they had wasted their time. Then, as the long dusk of summer settled over the trees and the moon hung full in the sky, a traveller had come to their clearing, asking to share their fire. He was a strange-looking man, tall and pale, with a shock of hair that was an almost unnatural red. Still, he had a skin of mead with him, and they let him eat with them in return for a few cups. The stranger was good company and funny, too, but as the brief night approached, conversation turned to religion. "I see you are men of the new faith," said the traveller, gesturing to the cross one of the hunters wore at his neck.
"We are Christ's," said a hunter. "You are a man of the old ways, I can see."
"I like to get as many gods as I can for my money," said the stranger. "It seems to me that all the lords of Asgard give a better bargain for your sacrifices than the one god of the East."
The men laughed.
"There are places in this land where you'd lose your tongue for saying that," said one.
Yes, the meek and merciful God can get in quite a bait when he's crossed, can't he?
It's no sin to defend the word of Christ, said another man.
Even if that word tells you that such a defence is sin, said the traveller. Are you recent converts or born into the faith?
This time 5 years ago I crawled on my belly before idols. Then the way of grace was shown to me, said the first hunter.
Why did you change? Said the stranger.
I was a slave, and the church paid for my freedom, he said. Christian men should not be the slaves of pagans. So says the Holy Father.
And you?
The same, said the second hunter. It wasn't so for me, said the third,
who was quieter than the other two and cleverer.
What was it?
I felt the old gods were savage, he said, and this new one offered a gentler way. He so loved the world that he sent his only son to die for our sins. It seemed a beautiful story, how the God took flesh as a man.
You never saw that with Thor, did you? Said the first hunter.
I don't know about Thor, said the stranger, but it is well known that the old gods often took flesh as men.
How so? Have you not heard the stories?
Of how the gods can split off a hair and grow it as a man.
How their incarnations forget their godly origin and live as ordinary people. More of a challenge to be a god and not know it, I think, than to walk secure in your divinity as Jesus did.
Tell us one of these stories, said the first hunter. I'm in the mood for a tale and far enough away from the priests to not mind hearing one.
So the stranger told them a story of how the old mad god Odin had a dream one day that he was a witch in the earthly realm. But the dreams of the gods are not like the dreams of men. They take flesh. The witch became powerful in magic, and the god became jealous of his earthly self. So he sprinkled prophetic visions on her, like seeds onto the field. Then the great god Loki had a dream, too, of a beautiful slave girl who took a hot iron to her face to spite her owner. And Loki fell in love with his dream and came to Earth to sire two children with her. One was the Fenris wolf, who will eat the gods on the final day. The other was just a man. He gave them as gifts to a king and to the witch. A gift from Loki is no gift at all, though, and the wolf ate his brother and the witch before the king killed it with his dying blow, just as the wolf will kill Odin on the final day before it too is killed. In this way, it is said that Loki and his children are both Odin's enemies and his helpers. They smooth the way to his destiny, though that destiny is death.
It pleases the gods, said the stranger, to see the stories of their fate acted out in the earthly realm. The wolf and Odin have fought down the centuries, and will fight down those to come. It's easy to see where, if you know how to look.
So Judas was Jesus' helper, was he, by your reckoning?
Judas helped Jesus die for the sins of man, it is said, said the traveller.
Well, if that was against the will of God, it wouldn't have happened, would it?
It was the will of the devil working through Judas' hands, said the first hunter.
The will of the devil that all sins be washed away, said the stranger.
Then he is a strange devil indeed.
The men laughed some more.
We are luckier than you, sir, said one. We only have to listen to what the priests tell us, not think about it.
If God sends us these wolves, then that's enough for us, said the first hunter.
You should ask Loki, said the stranger. He is the one who sends wolves.
We don't pray to idols, sir, said the second.
No, said the traveller.
Then perhaps you should pray to your own god that Loki doesn't send you a wolf anyway.
if the fate of the king and the witch are anything to go by.
That sort of wolf we can do without, said the first.
The men sat by the fire and drank and talked until late. The stranger, who knew the woods well, told them of a cave a day west, following the north bank of the river. It is a famous wolf den, he said. And though hunters take the animals again and again, they always seem to return.
We will watch for it, sir.
The next day the man was gone when the hunters awoke. They had no better plan than to follow his advice. It was nightfall again when they came to the caves, which were set in a small cliff 100 paces from the river and 5 men's heights above it. The hunters looked around and were pleased to see wolf droppings along with some small evidence of kills. They camped nearby, sure that the wolves were out hunting and knowing that they would not return with men in the area. Nevertheless, the next day they tried the caves. It was a clear blue day and the moon was still visible, bright in the morning sky. They made the short climb to the mouth of the biggest cave. The first hunter took a stone from the ground and threw it in, while the other two stood ready with their bows. There was a noise from inside, but neither loosed an arrow into the darkness. It wasn't impossible that a traveller was sleeping in there, and as good Christians, none of the men wanted a murder on his hands. The hunter threw another stone. There was a scuffling sound, and the hunter caught a glimpse of something. It was paler than any wolf. A pig, maybe?
Master Wolf, come out, wherever you are.
Nothing stirred. The hunter moved closer, and his eyes began to adjust to the dark. He gasped when he saw what was inside the cave. It wasn't a pig or a wolf, but a boy, about 6 years old, with a shock of dark hair. He was in a terrible state, thin and filthy, with eyes that seemed too big for his head.
"It's a boy!"
the hunter called over his shoulder. He took an apple from his bag. The boy shrank back into the cave.
"It's for you. Go on."
The boy didn't move.
"I'll have it, then. See!"
The hunter bit into the fruit, but the boy just retreated further. The hunters were limited men, but not insensitive. They could see that winning the boy's trust would be no quick job. As Christians, they thought they had a duty to help him. The parable of the Good Samaritan had been impressed on them not 2 Sundays before, and they decided to wait until he learned to accept them. They would, they agreed, treat the boy as they would a nervous animal. So they stayed near, but not too near, hunted for birds and small game, cooked them, and left the food with water at the cave mouth. None of them could understand how he had lived. Pagans were known to abandon sickly children in the forest, but this boy had proved anything but delicate. Gradually, the boy became less wary, and the hunters were able to get closer. The moon was a slim crescent by the time he finally took the hand that was offered him. They decided the best thing to do was to get him back to their village and hand him over to the priest. It took 4 days to get out of the forest. The boy was dreadfully restless at night, throwing off the blanket the hunters had given him and scratching and howling in his sleep. The clever hunter felt very sorry for the child and put out his hand to stroke his hair. The child suddenly seized it. He was dreaming, the hunter could see, but his eyes were wide open, staring up at the sickle moon.
"Adisla," he said, "I will find you."
This has been an Audible Studios production of Wolfsangel, written by M.D. Lachlan, read by Mark Meadows. Copyright M.D. Lachlan 2011. Production copyright 2018 by Audible Limited. Audible Studios is a division of Audible Limited.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this programme.